The information presented is for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed are not necessarily the opinions of any Daikin company. This information should not be confused for accounting, legal, medical, or other professional advice. Please seek advice from a qualified professional for any specific questions.
It's actually a very safe refrigerant. Daikin wants to be involved in the community.
Making another touch point to build my brand.
So the first question we ask everyone is, welcome to Accelerated HVAC Success. My name is Ben Middleton. I'm the National Sales Training Manager for the Goodman, Amana, and Daikin brands. Today, we're in Colorado Springs at Smith Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling. And we're here with Mike Robinson, the owner of the company. Mike, thank you so much for inviting us out here.
Oh, very welcome. Thanks for being here.
So last week, we got to hear a little bit about how you built this. And, you know, you've just built a phenomenal organization here. But that came with, you know, the experience that you've had in building other companies in other parts of the country and a blueprint that you've kind of built for success over time. And I was fortunate enough to actually work for you in Racine, Wisconsin, and you had the same blueprint when it came to pricing. And so I wanted to talk with you a little bit about your pricing philosophy and strategy. You know, today in the industry, I would say that still a majority of contractors that are out there use some sort of a multiplier or divisor methodology that they've been taught maybe by their father, maybe their grandfather did it before them, or they've just heard from other people in the industry, this is the way that you price the system. But you have a little bit of a different take on that when it comes to pricing, and I'd love to just explore that with you. And if you wouldn't mind, you know, share kind of that philosophy with all of our viewers.
Sure. So we actually do a class for you in the learning lab. We do a branding and pricing strategy. So the number one thing any contractor needs to do is the first thing before we even talk about pricing is you have to establish your brand in the market. There's a reason why Kia doesn't sell a $200,000 automobile. And there's a reason why Mercedes doesn't sell a $25,000 automobile. Because they have different brands, different customer-focused marketing, customer-focused pricing, and they build their products around a brand that they've established in the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I've noticed over the years now, 35 years in the business, what I've noticed is there are a lot of pricing strategies out there. There's a lot of consultants and trainers who talk about pricing strategy. The issue, of course, isn't just that you have a price, but does your price meet your brand and what you're trying to establish, okay? So what we've always done, or what I've always done in my businesses, is I want to be the Ford dealer. I don't want to be the cheap guy. I don't want to be the Mercedes or Lamborghini dealer. I want to offer customers great value at a fair price, not a cheap price, and I certainly don't want to overprice services or installations relative to what the value is the customer is getting. So our pricing strategy is simple. We look at the market, and we use Gary Ellicks and mm-hmm. I both have had this philosophy probably since our time at Service Experts together. And that's that I look at gross dollars per crew day. I look at gross dollars per labor hour. I know that you know, Ruth King has a great budgeting and evaluation strategy. I've seen Ruth's stuff. I don't use it specifically, but a lot of those tactics are very good for contractors. And I've learned from those. But fundamentally, what we do is we go to market based on our overhead plus strategy of not using any divisor method, not using anything like that, but how much per crew day when I put them out there do I want to generate? I think Ruth does it by how much dollars per crew hour
right.
you want to generate, which is even more micro than what I do, and it's very effective. She's a great program. But what we do is we look at gross dollars per crew day and or gross dollars per labor hour that we do on our service side.
So in order to do that, you have to understand, obviously, your operating expense. You have to have a way of departmentalizing and understanding your different costs for each of your different department centers. And Gary and I have talked about that many times. He's been on the podcast with us, and we've talked about the departmentalization and putting that together. But I think, you know, for a lot of contractors, that can seem overwhelming as far as putting all of that together and trying to figure out where to put everything. You actually helped us put together our chart of accounts just to that, help contractors categorize and put all that stuff together, which is available on the HVAC Learning Campus, and people can download and access that if they want. But how do you go about understanding your operating expense, and where do you see contractors maybe spend way more than they should in that operating expense category so they can bring that down?
So let's start at the beginning of someone who's either in a small business, starting a small business, something like that. Normally what I tell them to do is look at your pricing of your competitors in the market. So again, it's market. That's our, what the class is called, market driven pricing.
Right.
Because, in your market, if the majority of people are at $10,000 and you think you're going to go to market at $20,000, the market potential for that offering is pretty small. Conversely, you don't want to go to market at $6,000 because you're leaving too much money on the table. So first thing I tell young contractors in the business, whether their age doesn't matter, I mean, young contractors to the business, is look at the pricing in the market and then figure out what your pricing could be, and then back into what the margin and the profit looks like based on the price you believe you can sell in the market. Not everybody believes that, and not everybody follows that, but I've been fairly successful doing it that way. So at the beginning, you look at where the market is. Then as you grow and you get your numbers, the actual, what are your direct costs? What is your overhead? So that now you're pricing for direct costs, you got to capture them all, plus your overhead and an allocation per crew. And where this really becomes very effective for contractors to understand is, here's what I hear sometimes. A contractor will say, how does Billy Joe Bob sell this for $2,000 less than me? He must be losing his butt, right? Here's the deal is if I have overhead, if we have the same overhead as a company, let's say, I'll just use a number. Let's say our overhead is $10,000. And I have one install crew, I've got to add $10,000 to every one job I sell just to cover my overhead.
Right.
If I have two crews, that's $5,000. If I have four crews, that's $2,500. If I have 10 crews, that's $1,000. So I can be less expensive if my gross profit per crew day to make my profit number gets me there based on more volume. And you're always going to sell more based on a pricing metrics than you are just, you're always going to be able to get more customers involved. The number of customers willing to pay that price is always greater in the middle than it is on the bottom or the top.
Well, and it's interesting you talk about that, because I think we got to talk about positioning a little bit too. When you build a pricing strategy, it has been proven out over and over again. I mean, you look at any industry, you go to any basic business class that you go into, and they will always talk about the curve, right? And all consumers always end up in the middle, and then you have the outliers that are on the side. It's the old, you know, dropping the balls at the top of the Plinko board. You'll see most of the concentration will end up in the middle of that that pattern that you have there.
That's right.
But in the HVAC industry, if I look at Hardie's shipping data, the funny thing is, to me, we will see 80% of the jobs being sold in the industry as a whole are in the base efficiency, the government minimum efficiency equipment. And a lot of that comes back to HVAC contractors just not offering options.
Well, if they're in the divisor method, their basic units are going to be $12,000 to $14,000,
right,
using the divisor method. I sell a mid-range, the two-stage 17-SEER units for $12,000 to $14,000.
Yeah,
because my gross profit per man day is the same, the only thing that differentiates my selling price, not perfectly, but pretty close. The only thing that differentiates my selling price is the cost of the equipment. The labor's the same, maybe a little bit here or there. The support materials are about the same. And the overhead per crew day going out is about the same. So the only thing variable in that whole thing is the cost of the equipment.
Right.
So if I have an 80, 14 SEER, and all the way up to a 96, 97 multi-stage or an inverter technology condensing unit, the only difference really in that price, and it's not exactly, but the only difference in that price is the cost of the equipment.
Right.
So when I sell that top-end unit for $19,000, people think I'm out of my mind. But my crew day is full, and I'm making my overhead and my profit at that number. Could I sell it for more? Sure. But we're also trying to take care of customers with good equipment. Unlike most contractors, about 70% of my sales are high-end products, 17, 19 SEER inverter technology type product, high-end furnaces with dual fuel. That's about 70% of my sales, and yet my price barely ever is at, for the top end unit, is 20 grand.
Yeah.
And I have people in my market, that will sell a base unit for 16 to 20,000. So how do you compete against me?
Well, you're bringing value to the consumer, right? I think at the heart of most HVAC contractors that I know, they want to just do a great job for the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they absolutely want to do. And if they can bring the best product to the consumer and still be profitable and have a great quality of life, pay their people well. You and I were just talking. I mean, you talked about an employee that you brought in before we got in and started recording this, but was working for another company. He said he was making, what, 25?
28.50 an hour.
Okay. And today,
he's making about $2,500 to $2,800 a week.
And that's just because of the training, the investment that you've made in him, and helping to develop that individual. But it's not because you had to just raise your prices to astronomical prices.
Right. And I'm drawing more and more quality technicians to our company because of the fact that the technicians at some of these larger companies or some of these private equity groups are being told that when the company is sold, their prices go up 50 to 100%.
Hmm.
So now the tech is in front of the customer, and they're offering a capacitor or a contactor for $850, and they're like going, this is a $22 part. Like, how is that fair to the customer,
mm-hmm,
right? And they're being taught more high-pressure sales, more high-pressure closing. We don't do any of that. We are fairly priced. We tell them, you might be able to find this cheaper, but you're not going to get the value that you get with us cheaper.
Right.
And so we found it's a good thing for us. I'm running the company to be profitable, but I'm not running the company to be able to go to investors down the line and say, hey, look at all my EBITDA, and so now pay me a multiple on that because I'm a money guy and I want to get out. I'm running the company to provide a great working environment for my people, to make a fair profit for the company, and to take care of the customer with equipment and services that they deserve without an outrageous price.
You know, that's interesting that you talk about that, and expand on that a little bit more. Running a company for EBITDA and, you know, really trying to squeeze every last bit that you can out of the company versus running a company for growth and longevity. What is the big difference between those two?
Well, you know, I'm certainly not an expert in the private equity world, what they're trying to do, but here's what we've seen. We've seen private equity guys come in And there's sort of like three tiers, right? The bigger fish eats the little fish all the way up the chain until you get to the whale, right?
Yeah.
So what happens is these guys come in, they offer people, you know, money, they buy them, they squeeze every nickel out of them, they take the hard, and I'm being general here. There's some good ones out there, and I don't want to disparage any of the good ones because there are good ones out there. But a lot of these guys come in, they try to squeeze every nickel out of the company, take away the morale of the company, change the culture of the company. They don't care. They just want to drive EBITDA to the bottom line so that they can get to a certain number, and then they flip that, and then they all walk away with a bunch of money. That's not when you're, if you're in business for yourself and you're certainly you want to make money, certainly you have to be profitable, certainly you have to do things, but I'm not driven by EBITDA to get out. I'm a contractor. My people are technicians and craftsmen. We're providing a great service to the consumer. We're following up with customers. We have 100% satisfaction guarantee with our pricing and with our quality of our work. So if you're not happy with the quality of work, you're not happy with all this stuff, you let us know, we'll make it right, whether it's fixing it, changing it, or refunding you part of your service fee or even installation fee. Because long term is we live here and we meet you and we want you to be satisfied. That doesn't mean you can satisfy everybody, I promise you. But that means is overall you get great, you know, reviews. And as you can see, I mean, we're 4.9 out of 5 stars, you know, 3,500 reviews. We treat the customer well. We do quality work at a fair price. We're not cheap, but we're certainly not to the level of some of these private equity groups or even the larger contractors in the market. And I would caution every contractor that you don't race to the bottom. This isn't about beating everybody's price in the market. But this is about driving the brand and the quality of price. And let me add one more thing. And everyone needs to understand that our business, that we're in it and we're contractors and we see it in our business. But there's many other businesses out there that we could learn from, primarily the car industry, because they're getting people to pay $50,000 to $100,000 every 5 years for something that depreciates immensely. We find it hard to get $20,000 from somebody that for a product that's going to give them comfort for 15 years. So look at them and how they've created what they've created. Obviously, financing is part of that, but they created a brand. And within that brand, Lexus doesn't care what Kia does. When you buy a Lexus, and I've not bought one, but I've gone in. Okay, so don't think I drive around a Lexus. But when you go into a Lexus dealer, they treat you like gold. They pamper to you. They ask you if you want a cappuccino. When you're doing business with them over time, because they know they're going to flip you every 3 to 5 years, when you go in, they'll give you the brand new Lexus to drive to work. You know, don't have to worry about getting a ride. You drop it off at Kia, you're asking your friend or boss or somebody to come and get you to take you to work to go back. So they don't really care about what Kia does. They're all about the customer experience and people buy from them. So in the HVAC world, if you're going to be Lexus, you can't show up with a 20-year-old truck leaking oil in the customer's driveway with a technician who looks like he just came off a 3-day bender. Like you have to deliver the perception of the value and the quality of the human being delivering that service if you're going to charge those prices. And you should charge those prices if you're doing that. Conversely, if you're showing up in a 20-year-old truck with people that aren't, you know, look like they just got out of jail, they may be quality people and they may be quality technicians, but they don't look the part. You can't charge Lexus prices. You just can't, because there's a disconnect there between the service being provided and the price being charged.
You know, one last thing I think that is so important to that pricing strategy is also making sure you manage expenses. I've seen so many HVAC contractors, and we talked about this a little bit last week when you and I were talking about how you built this company and everything that you've done, but you get to the point where you got a little bit of money in the bank and all of a sudden spending, and what gets really scary is you get those reoccurring bills that go on because maybe you decided that I wanted to get this house or I wanted to get this RV or, you know, the toys that actually just end up nickel and diming you to death. But I think that's so important. If you can be a good steward of your resources and you manage those operating expenses, it does allow you to just be very competitive in your market and make a really, really good living.
And you're not reactive.
Yeah.
So I tell everybody, you should have 6 months of overhead bills in your savings account before you really go try to crack the code of grow your business. So if you've got, if your overhead's $50,000 a month, you should have $300,000 of cash in a savings account, real cash in a savings account, while you then to talk about investing in other trucks and taking on loans or other things, the cash flow and pay for themselves. Mm. Because that insulates you from the ups and downs of the industry, which come for sure. And it's not always weather driven. It could be politically driven. It could be, all kinds of different things could happen that change where your business, but you're always covered. You have enough to survive the storm. And sometimes the biggest companies that grow are the ones that survive the storm because they don't have so much built up debt. We've seen it in the last 2 years. It's been tough in the industry the last 2 years because the interest rates are going up and we sort of front loaded, I think, some things during mm-hmm. COVID. And I've seen more than a few companies go out of business because they were making so much money in 2021, 2022, that they got upside down on personal debt or other things, or even company debt. And then when the slowdown came, and it came to everybody. I mean, I talked to some people that were part of large companies. I don't know if it was private equity or whatever, but I talked to some of them that were down year over year 30%. Mm. Well, if you don't have any backup with that, how do you, if you're over leveraged, how do you make that happen? We stepped back about 5-8% from our peak in 2022, 23 and 24 were down. But we invested in this building, we invested in training, we invested in more technology, more trucks, software to manage inventory. We invested over those 2 years in building up our team and our people so that now it's starting to change. Well, now it's nothing for us to go to 20, and it really won't push us too much to go to 30 because all of that investment's there to go forward because we don't, my wife and I, who's actually was very kind at the beginning of this, said, I'm the owner. I'm actually not. I just get to work here. My wife's actually the owner. But we were able to invest so that now, because we don't have high debt, personal debt load. In fact, I will tell you right now, we have no debt other than, you know, the building. We own these buildings that we pay mortgage on. But personal debt, we have none. And so we were able to you know, grow and invest without worrying about when does the market come back. It comes back. It always does. And we're ready to go. So,
well, Mike, thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure.
You know, I think we've got one more week in us. We're going to get together again next week, and we're going to talk about technology and how that is really evolving the industry. But thank you so much for spending time with us.
Yeah, my pleasure again. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah. For all of you that are out there, if you liked this episode, please go ahead and hit that like button. And also, please make sure that you're subscribing to our podcast channels or you're following us on YouTube so you can be informed of all of the other upcoming episodes that we have. Until next time.
It's actually a very safe refrigerant.
Daikin wants to be involved in the community.
Making another touch point to build my brand.
So the first question we ask everyone is,